This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Wow, look at you all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You're very kind.
Like all great sports stories, this one begins in Rhode Island. All right, so maybe it's not the start of all of them, but little Rhodey, or the Ocean State, was home to the first U.S. Open, so it's a big part of the story of American golf. It was also the birthplace of tonight's two victims, Billy Andrade and Brad Faxon. They're lifelong friends, great golfers, but most importantly, two of the sport's great guys.
I met up with them at the gorgeous Big Cedar Lodge, where they were competing in the Bass Pro Shop Legends of Golf. Both are past champions of the event, and both are legends not only of golf, but back in the old neighborhood.
Roger Williams, George M. Cohen, Seth MacFarlane, and the Farrelly brothers, and you two. Are there are there any other famous people from Rhode Island?
No.
Is that it?
That's probably it.
My minions and I have come up with some slogans, and you can pick one for Rhode Island if you want. Rhode Island, you can see it all with less than a half a tank of gas.
Twice.
Easy. Twice?
Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah. Rhode Island, it's like Staten Island, only smaller.
Ooh. That's going below the belt.
It is, yeah.
You kidding me? Come on.
Excellent. Rhode Island, where the wasps of Connecticut and the assholes of Massachusetts come together.
That's probably right.
That's pretty good.
I like that one. I'd go with it. Yeah. Massholes.
Yeah. Billy and Brad both had stellar amateur careers with Walker Cup appearances and All-America awards. Brad played on a pair of Ryder Cup teams and won 8 times on the PGA Tour. Meanwhile, Billy notched 4 PGA Tour wins and has 3 PGA Tour Champions victories, including the 2015 Charles Schwab Cup Championship.
Listen, why don't you each play analyst and dissect each other's game?
Like, what would we you haven't played together in a long time.
I know.
In a tournament a long
time.
When... But I would say that for some reason, and a lot of announcers, and I think Lanny too, gave you a little grief when his left foot tends to slide a lot. And you can look at a lot of great players like Masters champion Patrick Reed that have a left foot that go crazy. Johnny Miller's did that. I mean, it's an endless list.
Greg Norman.
Balances to me is a very overrated part of the golf swing. And Billy, for his size, has a lot of speed, still hits the ball far. I think you improved when you went to more of a cut shot with your driver. You know, Billy's got wonderful rhythm, and that supersedes to me anything to do with footwork. And when he putts well, I mean, he's in contention. He's done it out here for a long time. The best part about Billy's game to me is when he gets in contention, he's not, like, uncomfortable with that. You know, when he gets with a chance to win, I don't see him backing down.
So what would you think about Brad? What would you say about it?
I don't think that there's a better player, statistically-wise, that has made as much money and has won as many tournaments and has played Ryder Cup that...
Just knew how to get the ball in the hole.
Yeah. You can go down the list of guys that would be not happy with that. Oh, I can't... Oh, I played Faxon today and he shot 66 and, you know, he tripped in 3 times. And I think that's fabulous. There was a time that Brad and I played with Hale Irwin. It was in the final round. It was just one of those days that I don't even think Brad looked... And the ball went in the hole. And I wasn't looking, and I was going in the hole. And Hale couldn't make a putt. And we were kind of laughing at each other, like how these balls were just flying in. And Hale just did not like that, you know, because...
He still doesn't like that.
Yeah, but it's just funny how, like, you know, I look at Brad's game and I just say, got the ball in the hole better than anybody I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I saw it when I was 14, 15 years old. And, you know, he did it for a long time. And had a hell of a career.
How have you approached the game differently?
I think that I'm more of an artist, and I think Brad's more of a mechanic. I never really had formal lessons when I was a kid. I just kind of played the game. And I think that's... And then playing other sports. I grew up playing everything. I was a pitcher in baseball, shortstop. I played hockey, played basketball, you know, through high school. And just being an athlete, and I brought that over to golf and try to learn as a golfer to be more of an athlete and not get in my own way. You know, I don't look pretty. I may not be in balance at times. I don't care as long as I know where it's going.
You know, I don't think it was, you know, I could get it from A to B. It wasn't as pretty as most people, but I've paid for lessons from 78 different swing instructors.
78?
Yep. I think it's a record.
It has to be. I've written checks to at least
I think it's a little disturbing you actually know that.
When he got the guy at 7-Eleven in Ohio to go back to the golf course to watch him hit balls, I knew he had a problem.
Sky cabs give me lessons, I swear.
No, it's 78.
78, yeah, I could.
Wow.
That's who he's paid.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a big line of people that still think I stiffed them.
How long have you two been friends?
I think we met in the mid-70s, I would say. I'm 3 years older than Billy, but when you're 12 and 15, that's an eternity, isn't it?
Yeah,
big.
But I was like, who is this guy? And, you know, he had one of those little bags he'd strap over his shoulder, and he had this Tommy Armour blade putter. You'd never seen anything like it, but it was... He was short when he was young, but this putter, you couldn't even reach down into the bag to pull it out. It was so short. It was like, it almost needed like its own sleeve, and it had gauze tape around the back of it at lie angle. It looked like a hockey puck, and nobody bent over more ever than Billy Andrade to hit a putt. And I'm like, this guy never misses. It was unbelievable. No,
what's your first memories of Brad?
My first memory was in the pro shop at Rhode Island Country Club. My dad was thinking of joining the club, and he was running around working at the, you know, working for the pro, Fred Bruno. And he was already legend status in the junior golf world. He also was faces of the crowd. And I remember with Sports Illustrated for being the youngest Rhode Island junior golf champion and also the 14 and under state champion in ping pong.
15 and under.
15 in ping pong. He won the state junior 4 years in a row. And I grew up playing with him. I just thought that everybody putted like him. It was unbelievable.
Normal?
It was I thought that was normal, that you would go out and you would have 24 putts in a round and make it look easy.
Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room here. You're putting. You're maybe the best that ever walked the face of a golf course. I've never seen anybody putt better than you. What's the key to it?
Well, I mean, if I could say that, first of all, I think where we learned to play was a great place. You know, I said it before that we had an ideal golf course with good greens, with lots of slope and lousy conditions, you know, meaning weather. And we putted a lot of times watching balls, you know, from 6 feet have to go a foot outside the hole. And a lot of the courses, the Ross courses we grew up on were like that. So I think we learned organically how to putt. You know, as a caddy, you always were reading putts for other people. So, you know, we didn't have mirrors and strings and, you know, templates to putt on. And look, I think that everybody out here that's teaching short game and putting now is well intended. But the bottom line is I think a lot of guys forget, hey, you got to have this knack to get that ball in the hole. And there's no one style that worked, is there? You know, there's not one that's, you know, you can copy and put on a press and say, just do what he did.
I mean, you look at someone like Mark McNulty, who took it back shut and... So, yeah.
Fingers down the shaft with an old bullseye putter. A Corey Pavin bullseye putter with his left thumb off the shaft. How far over Jack Nicklaus bent with that blade sort of style putter. He was great. Tom Watson, Seve Ballesteros had the toe off the ground, as did Aseo Aoki. And I think the beauty of those players was they embraced being themselves, didn't they? They didn't try to copy somebody else's style. And I think that's the problem a lot of times is teachers believe in their way more than they do the ability of the athlete.
Can you let us in on what you told Rory that made such a difference to his putting?
First of all, this guy's won 4 major championships. Yeah. He's as talented as any guy I've ever seen. He's a beautiful swinger of the golf club.
But stuck with his putt. I mean, you see him. He just doesn't
but I mean,
look comfortable.
I'll tell you, earlier in the year, we were standing together at the Seminole Pro Member watching Adam Scott tee off on the first hole, and Adam Scott had just maybe gotten a lesson from George Gankus, and Gankus has this peculiar sort of routine he puts some players through, and Rory's dad, Jerry, was there, who was a great player himself, and we watched Gankus tee off and make this kind of funny-looking move, and Rory says, you know, when I hit a driver, I don't think about anything. So when he called to talk
Hello.
About putting, you know, we sat down at the Bears Club where he practices, and I felt like it was almost like, for me, like an interview almost to see if I could be a guy that could help him. I said, hey, would you like to be able to say I putted great, but I didn't know what I did? Would you be okay with that being the result? And he goes, oh, I'd love that right now. You know, so that just kind of told me, look, my head's filled with a couple thoughts. And, you know, he had already made up a couple choices on his own. I don't take credit for it, but he had gone back to his longer putter, which he had used when he won four of his majors. He had old Scotty Cameron that was 34 and a quarter of inches, and he had switched to a 33-inch putter. And he said to me, you know, do you care if I'm a little bit open when I putt? And I'm like, no, a lot of great players were open, and I like to be a little open. He said, I'm very right-eye dominant, and I like to feel a little bit open. And I'm like, when a player tells me they like to do something, that's yes.
What
my
do you
answer.
Like to do?
So
yeah.
I really didn't have to say much. It was a little bit about routine and getting things going. And
make yourself happy?
Yeah.
What's this about butt dialing, Arnold Palmer?
You know, I'm not technology advanced, so I just get this new BlackBerry comes out. This was back when BlackBerry was the thing to have. Everyone had to have it. On my phone list, it still is in my phone, AP is number one. And for some reason, my phone would start ringing. It'd go to the first phone number in my contact list. It was funny for maybe 6 months. And after that, it became not funny for Arnold.
How many times did you dial him?
It went off one time in my sport coat that I was hanging up in a hotel room. And all of a sudden, I hear, Billy, damn it. You got me again. You know, it's like it was intimidating, right, to hear Arnold Palmer coming out of a closet, you know, the voice.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and it happened all the time. So
could you rephrase that?
Oops.
You guys are both dedicated family men. How difficult is it to balance, you know, playing golf for a living and being a good dad?
It's very difficult. I think the whole thing of trying to make it work is something that, you know, you have to have an unbelievably independent wife that understands what you're doing. And I was very lucky to have that out of the gate. To see Jack Nicklaus as a role model and what he and Barbara did. And I just remember as a young kid reading stories about Jack and about how, you know, he would always try to make it to his kids' high school football games or their daughter's volleyball games, and always being there for his kids is something that I never forgot. Raising two kids is something you always want to be there for, but there's a lot of times I missed a lot of things that I wish I didn't. I know Brad's had it with all his girls, which is just amazing.
The beginning part was easy when kids were young and you could travel with them and bring them all over the world.
Yeah.
That part of the life was incredible. And then when school started, school always changed things for us because it was still the same. We would go play golf, but, you know, like Billy said, to have a wife that supports you, understands that the focus is on you, especially when you're playing well, you know, and it's always about you and your golf, and it's tough.
Brad, your dad was an excellent golfer. You know, what was your relationship like?
You know, he was my dad. You know my dad so well. a member at this club, Rhode Island Country Club. And my parents were divorced early, and he was a club champion there. He was, you know, a grinder. You know, he was one of these guys that was an incredible chipper and putter. You know, is it genetic or do you learn by watching? But he was a very supportive daddy. He pushed me enough, you know, not where I'd hate the game, but he always had me caddy for him, then let me go play in the afternoons. And he did the greatest thing that I think any father could have done for me. And he said to me, Sook, if you can take your golf game and treat it as a job for the next 2 years, you're going to get a scholarship at school. That scholarship's going to be way more money than you're going to make caddying. You know, we were making $4 or $5 a bag. And he kind of let me go work at golf, and I got that scholarship, and it was the greatest deal ever made, really. If he didn't do that, I wouldn't have played professional golf, no way.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor.
Why is Farmer supporting my show? Well, I've interviewed over 100 guests, ranging from legendary golfers to presidents to celebrities. And just like Farmers is smarter from their unbelievable but true experiences, from each of my interviews, I've gained great knowledge that I can carry forward. Well, from most of them. Anyway, thank you, Farmers, for supporting my show.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
All right, then. Now back to the show.
Well, this is that part of the show that everyone looks forward to. It's rapid fire. Start the clock, please. What's the greatest sports movie of all time?
Caddyshack.
I like The Natural.
Who's your favorite player to be partnered with?
I always been great with Freddy Couples, always.
Joe Pesci.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Simultaneous. What was the last book you read?
People Magazine.
You sound like Rocco, People Magazine.
Who's your favorite 1970s Red Sox player?
Dwight Evans, right fielder.
Rico Petrocelli.
Yeah.
Rico Petrocelli?
Fred Lynn, Jim Rice.
Yes.
Rick Burleson.
Speaking of the Red Sox.
Carlton Fisk.
What?
Carlton Fisk.
Okay, you can stop now.
Louis Tian.
Carl Yastrzemski.
I love Louis Tian. Yaz. I forgot Yaz.
Yaz.
Oh, my gosh. How can you forget Yaz?
Yaz?
Carl Yastrzemski.
Oh.
Can you spell that one?
No.
No, but I think I have.
Put that in with Juana Matanami. And Quahog.
Quahog. Giggity, giggity. What's your best sport other than golf?
I was a pretty decent basketball player.
He was a really good basketball
yeah?
player.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I was good at anything kind of with a racket. I know that's...
Ping pong.
Yeah.
Well, that was rapid fire, and as always, you win nothing. Tell me a bit about broadcasting. You've both kind of dabbled in it and done pretty well.
For me, it was fabulous to learn a new craft. And I learned quite a bit. And I have to thank Jack Graham for asking me to come on board at the Golf Channel. I guess the stars were aligned. My son was in high school. My daughter was in middle school. My wife was starting seminary. And I kind of needed to be home, and I wasn't playing very good golf. And it was a great break that I took. I learned a lot. I did a little bit of everything. I was an analyst mm-hmm. for a few tournaments, and then I was a hole announcer for a few tournaments. And then I kind of settled into the role of on-course commentating, mm-hmm. and I loved it.
You know, like you, I loved the game. You know, I always watched golf. I always listened to golf on TV. When I was with friends, I loved to talk about the game. So it was kind of a natural fit when I got my start, and it was kind of unusual. I had knee surgery in 2007, and during the Deutsche Bank Championship at the TPC at Boston, where I had done a little bit of the renovation work with Gil Hanse and his team, Tommy Roy, from producer NBC, asked me to come up and speak in the booth for 15 minutes. And I sat in the tower with Johnny Miller and Dan Hicks and, you know, talked about golf. And they said, do you want to stay another segment? And then I stayed another segment. It was another hour. And I'm like, wow, this is longer than I thought. And I had a blast up there.
You're
who would?
Doing it, yeah.
Your hometown, home course. And then transitioned from hole announcer at NBC to an analyst for Golf Channel for a couple of years, which I thought was the hardest part, Billy. You know, when you sit next to Brandel and Frank, and they know everything about every player that's ever lived, that's hit every shot in every tournament.
Yeah, but that's not your job.
No, but yeah, I mean, it was fun. I liked it because you had to be prepared. You had to look into a camera.
Yeah.
And you had to get in and get out, too, all the time while somebody's in your ear.
Somebody in your ear. Yeah.
Awesome.
And, of course, you're doing the U.S. Open now with Fox. That's got to be a blast.
It is. You know, I got lucky because I was working for Golf Channel. And when that transition from when NBC had been doing the Open came to Fox, and, you know, I was starting to play a little bit less on the senior tour, not as well. And I'm like, oh, this is a great opportunity. I only work 8 weeks, all the USGA's events. Been able to sit next to Paul Azinger and a lot of people watch our national championship.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. They say that charity begins at home, and that's certainly true for Billy and Brad, who've worked tirelessly to provide for the people of Rhode Island and a lot of other places too. They may not be the biggest names in golf, but they're certainly two of the game's biggest do-gooders. In fact, the bastards made me feel so guilty, I volunteered to help. You're both really committed to charitable work. Where does that come from?
Well, I can start that. Just to say, you know, we got the opportunity to do this work for the Meeting Street School, where Billy's brother had spent time as a young kid. And they kind of got us started to raise some money for their school. And then, you know, we have that story about how we started our own foundation, the Andrade Facts and Charities for Children. I think it was, you know, Billy's wife, Jody, came up with this idea of maybe sprinkling the infield and being able to raise money for more different charities around the state of Rhode Island, concentrated on children and women's charities in the state.
Billy, tell me about your brother. What he means to you?
Yeah, my brother Jack's the oldest of three in our family, and he When he was a young boy, he went in for his get a tonsillectomy, and he was 14 months old. My mom took him in at 7 in the morning, and at 3 in the afternoon, the doctor came out and said, everything's fine, and here's your baby, and went back home, and he just never developed. And come to find out, they found out years later, the anesthesiologist screwed up. He was in a coma and came out, and, you know, he lost, you know, brain cells, and he's slow. I would say third grade, fourth grade would be what he's at. He doesn't drive, so he rides his bike everywhere. You know, he was my inspiration to give back. We actually did a couple of days for Meeting Street School, and we didn't raise a whole lot of money. And I said to Brad that I think we can raise a lot more. And we had some great role models and great friends in Rhode Island and the business community that really helped us out. Terry Murray, Bev Dolan at the time was the CEO of Textron.
Terry Murray started Bank of America, you know, founded Fleet and Bank Boston and Bank of America.
And he was well connected in the state. So getting the big business leaders in our state to get on board with us and what we were trying to do was how this whole thing evolved. And, you know, to think of, okay, you got Meeting Street School where my brother Jack went, and it was across the street from where I went to high school, and I volunteered over there when I was in high school. So that whole connection was kind of the impetus of, you know, giving back. And then Brad and I, you know, going around the country, playing on the tour, and seeing other players doing stuff in their communities, and invite some celebs to come in and play and get this thing going. And it just grew and grew and grew. We started in the early 90s. We were doing it every...
Andre Faxon.
One-day event.
The Andre Faxon.
In the summer.
Yeah.
And then in 1998, CVS was the sponsor at Pleasant Valley. It was just a one-year deal. We didn't know if that was going to go away or not. And the CEO, Tom Ryan, who's dear friend of ours, approached us and said, you know, we went up to that Fred Meyer Challenge up there in Portland, and Peter Jacobson's doing some great work up there. I think we could maybe do that in Rhode Island. What do you guys think? And the two of us talked it over and said, man, if CVS wants to get on board, we can run with this, and we can raise big money. This year is our 20th anniversary.
And is that the one I'm coming to, or am I coming to the Andre Faxon?
I may have you come to Atlanta.
Is that a different one?
That's a different one.
Yeah. How many charities have they got?
That's the East Lake Invitational.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be
there.
That's
something I do in my adopted hometown of Atlanta, Georgia.
Right.
Yeah.
Incidentally, I bought some hemorrhoid ointment at CVS just the other day. So in a small way, I'm contributing. We have some Rhode Island trivia here. Whichever one of you gets the most correct wins Frank, who is a Rhode Island Red.
Yeah.
Population-wise, what is the second largest city in the state?
Cranston.
Incorrect. Ding.
Warwick.
All right, Warwick.
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 Did you say Warwick?
Yes.
Warwick.
Well, you're not pronouncing it correctly.
Warwick.
Yeah, England had one first. What is the official name of the state?
Rhode Island and the Providence Plantations.
State
correct.
Of Rhode Island and the Providence Plantations.
Rhode Island bore a significant role in the history of golf. What was it?
First U.S. Open, USA.
Correct.
1895.
What famous toy was invented in Rhode Island?
Mr. Potato Head.
Yes.
Hasbro.
Hasbro.
Well, congratulations, Brad. You win the trivia contest and you win my little Rhode Island cock. So, Billy, tell me, how did you get friendly with Joe Pesci?
I was playing the Shark Shootout out at Sherwood, and I had a friend of mine who kind of took care of me when I went to California, Tony Federico. He was bald head, and we called him the Head. And so the Head took care of me anytime I was out there, picked me up at the airport, brought me to Lakeside Golf Club where he played, and Joe Pesci was a member at Lakeside. Mm-hmm. I think this was in 1991. Goodfellas just came out. So I don't know if Pesci won the Academy Award yet. But we finished the round. My wife and I get back to the hotel that we were staying at. My buddy Tony's going to come pick us up, and then we're going to take my wife and I are going to go to the airport and take the red eye back to Atlanta. So we're at the hotel, and you know that's back in the day before cell phones, where the light was on the phone. So I pick it up, and it's a message from my buddy saying that I'm on my way to pick you up, which I know, and I got Joe Pesci with me, and I went. I hang up, and my wife's going out to check out. And I said, you know, Joe Pesci's coming with Tony Federico. Yeah, right. Yeah, sure. I've been having to go to the bathroom pretty much all day. So this is my time to go to the bathroom. So I'm in the bathroom, and Tony walks in and says, "Hey, I'm here. You ready?" I go, "Yeah, hold on. I'll be right out." And all of a sudden, the door kicks in, and there's Pesci standing there, all 5'4" of them, in a black leather coat, smoking a cigar, going, "So I've been told that you want to meet me. So here I am." And then
he's sitting down.
I was on the John. I was going to the bathroom.
Then he throws me. Do you know what a John is?
Yeah.
And then he throws me a cigar. He goes, "You might want to light this up." I was just blown away. So that was the time of meeting him, and we became, you know, instant friends for a long time.
Well, you probably played your best golf in 91. You won 2 in a row. At that point, did you think, you know, I've got Jack Nicklaus in my sights here, or?
No, I never thought about Jack, but...
That wasn't a serious question, for Christ's sake.
Jack is brother, maybe.
Barbara. Winning those first two back-to-back was something that was, you know, I just got on this roll, and I just ran with it. I never thought, okay, I'm going to now become best player in the world here. I just kept the ride going.
You want to make a living playing golf?
I just love what I'm doing. Yeah. I just went with it. Never thought that I wanted to be the best. I just want to have fun. This game has brought so much. I mean, not just on the course, but off the course. The people that we meet, you know, what we're doing. I tell the story all the time. Arnold Palmer came to Wake Forest. The Vantage Championship was at Tanglewood. And he came by Wake Forest to see his boys. You know, he just told a story that Wake Forest and golf can open up many doors. You might be a club pro, you might be a PGA Tour player, you might use golf and Wake Forest in business, and it could do all this great stuff for you.
Yeah, he managed that quite well.
Yeah, it's something I never forgot. This game can change your life, and it sure as heck changed mine.
I have a photograph, David, in my office from the 1998 Masters. Billy and I got to play with Jack and Arnold in a practice room.
Oh,
it was
wow.
Wednesday. And it's a picture of us walking up the third fairway, and all our caddies are to the side with our names on the back, and it's a picture from, you know, behind us. It's an unusual look, and we can see all four of us talking with all of our names, you know, up the third fairway with galleries everywhere. And that particular day, Jack and Arnie were going to play us for $20 two downs, and we waxed them. We won five ways the front, so we were up $100, and then on the top of the ninth green, Jack and Arnie are having a little powwow. We're running to the 10th fairway. We can't wait to get over 10th tee. And Arnold comes over and, "Hey, guys, I think Jack and I are going to go in and have a little bit of lunch." And Arnold kind of pats me on the shoulder. He goes, "Isn't it going to be great that Arnold Palmer owes you $100 for the rest of your life?" I was like,
"What?
Wait a minute.
We're going to go to 10th hole."
But I mean, that story's worth way more than $100, and having that picture there.
Absolutely.
So great stuff.
Billy, golf's a funny game. Tell me a story.
Well, we were on the West Coast playing at San Diego, and I missed the cut. I shoot a million.
That's not that funny.
And the next week is the Bob Hope Classic, and Jerry Weintraub, he's got a beautiful place in Palm Springs. He's having an AFC-NFC championship Sunday. And also you have the final round of the Torrey Pines tournament. Honestly, I think you were in the final group with Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods.
I was.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm at Jerry's house, and he's got the football games on, and he's also got the golf on. And, you know, I'm playing armchair quarterback here, and I'm going, "Yeah, he doesn't look really good. His swing looks like it's, you know, it doesn't look like he's on today. You know, maybe Fax or Mickelson can win here. You know, oh, look at that shot. That was not a very good shot. Oh, look at that putt. That wasn't a very good putt." And finally, Jerry Weintraub turns to me and goes, "Hey, kid, I just want to tell you something. If you were so good, then you would be there, and you wouldn't be sitting on my couch watching the damn thing. So maybe you need to go out and practice a little bit, but enough's enough." And I went, "Yes, Mr. Weintraub, enough is enough."
That's awesome.
And Jerry Weintraub's really good friends with the Bushes. And I don't know, you get a little...
Nice segue, Billy. Yeah? Like you've done this before. No, we're trying to think of funny golf stories. In 2003, the Bushes invited my wife Dory and I up to play golf in Kennebunkport and stay. And he said, "Hey, look, I'll call you. I'll have my people get in touch with your people." And I'm like, "I don't have any people." So I'm thinking, how's he going to call me? I got a blocked cell phone. So the next day, you know, I get this call from a caller ID block number, and I'm not even thinking that it's going to be, you know, the President of the United States. And I answer the phone and say, hello. And a woman's voice said, hold for the President of the United States, please. I'm like, oh, my. And he goes, hi, Brad, George Bush. And he goes, hey, would you and Dory like to come up? And I said, yes. I didn't need to know the date or when it was. So we lived in Rhode Island, and we're a 2.5-hour drive to Kennebunkport. We get up there. We get in through the security, drive up to the circle, and George pulls our luggage out of the car. He puts it up in the main house. George and Laura were here just last week. You can use his swimsuit. When we go swimming, we're going to go play golf now with Mark Plummer, the 8-time Maine amateur champion. We're going to go over there right now to Cape Arundel. So we go play. And George, he plays polo. He barely gets out of the golf cart. And he used to give a golf ball with the presidential seal away to each group that we would go through, because he went through everyone. And he said, I used to give a sleeve to every group. Now I give him one ball, and I say, you guys play for this on the next hole. You know, he says, I'm too cheap, which I love. But we're playing the last hole, and the course record was 63. And Mark Plummer, the guy we're playing, was the course record holder. And I've got it 7 under, par 69, so I par the 18th hole for 62. And I'm kind of nervous. And I knocked it down the fairway and hit a wedge onto the green about 25 feet. Now it's starting to rain. And I putted up, like, literally to 2 feet. And I, you know, hadn't taken any gimmies or anything. If a putt was this far, yes. But I'm going over this thing, and I'm thinking, they probably should give me this. And now, as we're getting over, it's starting to rain harder, so President Bush puts the umbrella over my head, and, you know, Mark Plummer's standing over there, and I go to putt this thing. Now I'm, like, thinking, I'm nervous, and I'm like, this better go in. And I putt it, and I swear to you, I got the Joe Daly. It hits the back of the cup and comes out.
Oh, you're kidding.
I swear to you. It wasn't too hard. It just went clink.
And it hit the rim?
Right, hit the rim, came right back at me.
You're kidding.
And President Bush goes, why'd you do that? Like, I didn't. And I was so crushed, and I shot 63. So I tied this course record, like, 5 other players.
And Mark Plummer went running off.
So Mark Plummer's walking off the front of the green, and I hear him say to Joe O'Donnell, the other guy we played with, he goes, ah, when I shot 63, they gave me 5 putts longer than that.
Oh.
Bastard. So, you know, he had one of those big Raleigh fingers sort of mustache. And I'm like, oh, my God. I can't believe it. But I did get to go back and beat it finally 1 year. And then Phil shot 59. So.
Boys, thanks for joining me here at the top of the rock.
A lot of fun. Thank
thanks,
you.
David. On the Faraday Show.
Great
thank
you.
You.
Always enjoyed thanks. Seeing what you do and how you do it.
Thanks, man. I'd like to thank Billy and Brad for making an impression on my sofa, especially Billy's impression of Jerry Weintraub. Talking to them was a lot more fun than playing against them because, you know, they used to beat me pretty regularly on tour. Good night, sweetie. Thanks for joining me, Faherty fans. You can find more of the Faherty podcast presented by Farmers Insurance on Faherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Faherty and subscribe. If you love the show, and why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.